Wow, I wasn't expecting that. I like that already. Thank you all so much for having us. It's a real blessing and a pleasure to not only be here with you guys this morning and to be able to share a little bit about our lives, about us and our ministry, but just to have been in Sunday school with you guys already this morning, and our daughter Everly being looked after. She's just 19 months, so just over a year and a half old. So she's in the nursery now, I'm sure, being looked after very well. My wife Shannon is over here, and once again, my name is Nick and Shannon, and our daughter is Everly, but you can call her Evie. That's what we call her. That's her nickname. So, we are pregnant with our second girl, baby girl, due in about a month. So we appreciate your prayers on that. So I want to tell you guys a little bit about myself, as I'm the one that happens to be standing before you. And then I want to tell you guys about what we've been doing the last 6 years as full-time career missionaries with the International Mission Board. So I grew up in your typical cultural Christian family. Now, notice I didn't say practicing. I didn't say born again. Just your typical cultural Christian family. Though that was very regular, something that was very unique about my upbringing was that my mother, she worked over the years for two different exchange student companies. And so I grew up with 37 exchange students in my household. So I was raised in that environment. I'm the youngest. I have a brother 3 years older and a sister actually 8 years older. So I was the youngest of three, but with 37 other brothers and sisters as well. And they came to us from all over the world, all different continents. After high school, still not yet a believer, I got a job working as an entertainer, basically doing hosting, MC type work for Carnival Cruise Line. I did that for almost 2 years. I worked on six different cruise ships. And, well, being the secular young man that I was living the dream, as I'm sure you can imagine. And I won't go into too many details, but if some of you have an imagination, someone who didn't grow up in a practicing Christian born-again family, and I was enjoying everything the cruise ship life had to offer as an employee. So, it was, the month was March. It was the second week of March, and again, this was about 2 years into working for Carnival Cruise Line on my sixth and my final ship, and a Christian group of 18 to 25-year-olds, there were 45 of them, plus their staff. They came onto the ship where I was working, where I was hosting. And at that time, I was doing karaoke, so music. So I don't know if many of you have been to live karaoke much. You've probably seen it on TV, whether that be American Idol, The Voice. I feel like there's maybe even one more. You've probably seen those programs. I'm sorry to tell you that in the bar on the cruise ship, you don't usually see such talent as that like we do on TV. And that's the truth. They usually are heavy with liquid encouragement. And that's basically the performance that you get on a cruise ship. So this group was very different. And so after the first, the second, the third singer came on stage, while the fourth one was singing, I had to actually get up from where I do my emceeing, and I had to actually walk over, and I had to say, "Who are you people?" Because they were just so talented, not only vocally, but just their stage presence, the confidence about them. They knew where to hold the microphone, and how close, how far away, and you know, when they're doing their, what some people call their licks, you know, and their belting, or I was just like, wow. And during the fourth singer, I had to go say, you know, "Who are you people?" I probably used different words, but that was the gist of what I was asking. And come to find out, they said, "Yeah, we're a traveling Christian group." And as soon as I heard that C word, Christian, I was like, oh, here we go. You know, being the boy that I was, living the life that I wasn't looking for anything in that area. But I tell you what, I was looking. I was searching. But I guess you can probably guess I wasn't searching in the right places, whether that be alcohol or that nightlife partying on the ships or the opposite sex. I was looking, I was searching for that peace, that joy, that happiness that that we have as believers, as born-again believers. I knew I didn't have it. I knew I wanted it. And I was looking for it, but I was looking in the wrong places. During that week, being that there were some cute girls in that group, I gave them some of my time to communicate. And I started asking some questions that I've asked many times throughout the years to people, and people never had the type of answer that makes any sense, whether it be something related to God or Jesus or to ghosts or to UFOs. You know, the strange questions people have. I have those too. So I would ask them, and I was expecting them to say, I don't know, or give something that you just know doesn't make any sense, is what I typically heard is answers from people. But they actually, not only did they have answers I had never heard, but they opened this big, heavy, thick book, and they started to finger, thumb around in there and show me, back up what they were saying. So that got me interested in that book you might know as the Bible. I didn't know it as that necessarily at the time. And so by the end of their 7-day cruise, I was actually starting to open up a bit. And the day they got off, I was in the port of Miami. The day they got off, I went to one of those big bookstores like a Borders or, you know, big bookstore. I went over to the religious or the spiritual section, and they had said to me, you know, encouraged me to buy a Bible and start to read it on my own. And I said, I don't read a lot, and when I do, I don't comprehend very well. They said, pick up the NLT. I was like, all right. So I found me an NLT Bible, and I started to read that. And thanks to technology, as I was floating around there in the Caribbean and other places, I was able to email them questions as I was reading God's Word for the first time in my life. And they would email me back, and so I started seeking the Lord through His Word in that way. And after a while, I started to pray, God, you know, if you are real, I want to know you, and things like that. So I knew that they were praying for me because they were constantly telling me that. I was reading His Word. I was asking questions. They were giving answers. And then I started to pray. A few months had passed. So I met them the second week of March. And then in June, I was back in Michigan where I was raised. I wasn't born there, but I was raised there from age 3 until 18. I was back visiting my family. And they contacted me over the telephone, and they invited me to come down to Knoxville, Tennessee, where their ministry was headquartered. And so I came down, and it was a 5-day round-trip ticket that actually they purchased for me, because I said I didn't have any money. I was spending it on liquid courage and other things as I made it, you know, living that lifestyle. So there were 45 of them. Each of them pitched in $8. And that covered the cost of my 5-day round-trip ticket. And every time I say that, you know, you can't see because I have a sweater on, but, you know, my hair, I just remember back then when this happened, that was just the, you know, as somebody shares that love of Christ with you, that I was starting to feel that for the first time in my life. And God was really using these young believers to minister to me. And I was in Chilhowee Hills Baptist Church in East Knoxville, Asheville Highway, if you know the area. And they were meeting in the back parking lot in a tent because they were renovating their sanctuary. And the day was June 13th of 2004. And that was the day, the exact moment, when I stopped living my way and I accepted Christ, the biblical Jesus of the Bible. And I said, I no longer want to live my way. I want to live your way. I want to live for you and not for me. And I turned from going that way. I did a 180 and I started living in the opposite direction. And and no longer for myself, but for him. So I actually joined this ministry. I didn't go back to Carnival Cruise Line. I was just on vacation at the time. I was supposed to go back and keep working. And I went to the president of this ministry. It's called Primary Focus and Living Proof. And I said to Dr. Randy Rebold, I said, it's clear as day, God's changed my life, and I don't want to live that way anymore. I'm choosing to live for him. And I would like to become a team member in this group and help you guys and be discipled and learned and things like that. So I joined this ministry. I did that for 1 year. And Monday through Friday, they go into public elementary schools and they teach character counts and character education in the elementary schools, the public elementary schools, not private. And so basically they're teaching biblical attributes, but without saying God, without saying Jesus, because it's the public school. So teaching character to young children, biblical character. And then those same groups that are in schools from this ministry 5 days a week, then on the Sundays, they go in any Bible-believing church, and depending on if that church is more contemporary or more traditional or what have you, they will do a full concert and on the Sundays. So I did that ministry. And though I did karaoke, and though that was a singing-type ministry, I'm not a singer. As an MC host, I was doing more of the tech side of it, and the running the mixer and the EQ and hosting, as opposed to actually singing. And so then when I became a member of this ministry, I did more of the technical side of it, and driving the vans and the setup and the teardown and things like that. So after 1 year, then a beautiful young lady from the Bay Area named Shannon, she came to join that same ministry, and she did the next 2 years after me. I could have done a second year, third year, fourth year, but I felt the Lord just telling me I did 1 year. But I actually met her. They overlap you for 6 weeks, and they call that training camp to teach. They help the people who have experience. They help to teach the new people before they begin to travel the United States into the schools and churches for the next year. So I actually met Shannon then, and then, as you can obviously we're married, and that happened on the 5th of July in the year 2008. So I was 3 or 4 years into being a believer at that time, and 4 months after being married, Shannon and I. Well, let me say it this way: I expressed to her an interest in taking a mission trip. I had never been on a mission trip. And I expressed to her, growing up with 37 exchange students from all around the United States, and now being a believer, I thought, maybe God has allowed me to go through those things even before I knew him personally to prepare me for the mission field. Being around all those exchange students and then becoming a believer kind of makes sense. And so I said I'd like to take a mission trip as a young married couple. And so she said, if we really want to get a feel for it, instead of doing like a 1 week thing or 2 weeks like a church does, let's get on Google. Thank you for technology. And let's see if there are some programs out there that allow you to do something for maybe a month or 6 months or something like that. So we found the Hands-On program, which is through the International Mission Board. And the Lord sent us to Lisbon, Portugal. And we were there for 7 months, and it was during that time that the Lord actually confirmed to me what I was feeling, that call to go into missions and to work with people from all around the world. So after we finished our time on the Hands-On program, we knew that we wanted to go back career and do what we are now doing, but the IMB, they are a difficult group of people. They want you to be educated. Can you believe that? They want some seminary out of you. So I had to finish up my undergrad in biblical studies, and then I had to go on and do some seminary. And then we applied, and then the Lord called us once again back to Western Europe, which is where Lisbon, Portugal is. But instead of going to Portugal, The Lord called us to Italy. And so for the last 5.5 years, we have been serving in northern Italy. And then just recently, we were asked to transfer down to Malta, which is an island in the center of the Mediterranean, just south of Italy, but just north of North Africa. So right there in the center of the Mediterranean is where we are now. I want to spend a little bit of time talking with you guys about the 5.5 years in northern Italy. Because we've only been in Malta for such a short amount of time, it's just finding a place. I don't have a lot of ministry to share with you about that because it's been a lot of logistics and getting settled, and then we knew we were coming back here to the United States. So I'm going to focus a bit of my conversation on the time in northern Italy. So the first 2 years, they sent us to Milan, Italy, which is in the north central part of northern Italy. And the reason they chose to send us there, because our actual job assignment was to begin a new work in northeast Italy where no IMB personnel have ever been before. And so they wanted us to spend our first couple of years learning language and learning the culture where we had colleagues, which definitely makes a lot of sense. When you go overseas, you're in a different language and a different culture. You're not with, you know, mom and dad and family. You're not with your home church. You can feel very isolated and very alone. And so to learn the language and to learn the culture, they sent us to the geographically the closest place where we had other IMB colleagues, and that was Milan. So we spent 2 years there. We had to learn the Italian language and pass tests and things like that. During the time, because there were other IMB missionaries there, we helped every weekend, even throughout the week, with Bible studies and things at the church where we had other colleagues. So we were ministering the whole time, as well as 5 days a week in language school. And that'll take it out of you, let me tell you. Sitting in a classroom in full immersion 5 days a week, whew, that'll take it out of you. And so 2 years of that, learning language and culture and helping the church there. And God used us in a lot of different ways, helping that that congregation of believers. I'm more of a practical, my gifting is more practical as far as my dad is an electrician. My older brother is a carpenter. My brother and I grew up under my father doing everything practical, you know, insulating walls or sheetrock or carpentry or electrical or plumbing, just a little bit of everything. We're just all around handyman type guys. And so I used those gifts. I built for them the communion tray, you know, from wood with the legs, the handles, and it held 68 or 64 cups. And I built an offering box for them. And for the tech guys back there, I built because it was a portable church. They met in an Italian high school. I built an AV audio video rolling cart that held the mixer and different things. And I don't know, I can't even remember everything right now. But just using my practical gifts, because we didn't have the language yet to be able to really communicate with the people. So I wanted to be a blessing in different ways. So fast forward, after 2 years of that, we moved on to where the Lord called us, northeast Italy. And our new home was Verona, Italy. It's about an hour from Venice by car and by train. And I don't know if anybody knows Verona when I say the name Verona, Italy. You guys know Shakespeare. So Shakespeare used the setting of Verona as well as the names of, what is it, Shannon? Yeah, so though Shakespeare is from England or London, he used characters' names in the setting of Verona, and so that kind of got them famous. So you have Juliet's balcony in Verona, and I'm telling you, millions of people come from all around the world to see Juliet's balcony. Now, can I tell you the truth? It's not true, you know? It's just made up. But sure enough, they flock in because they thought that Juliet stood there, you know, and then they have her tomb as well. And people are really interesting. Have you ever noticed? People are interesting. So So we were living there, and it really is beautiful. I mean, they have the it's called the Adige River that flows through Verona, and it's at the base of the Swiss Alps. So you actually, on the northern side of Verona, you have the foothills of the Swiss Alps that finish on the northern part of Verona. And then you got the Adige River flowing through it. And then you have all the bridges. Oh, it's really very picturesque. And you guys, whether you've been to Europe or you've seen it in movies, you know that old architecture. Oh, Verona's beautiful. And we thought we would spend our entire career there. Not only ministering in Verona, but then also outside of Verona in the Veneto region in all of the Northeast. We just would keep make that our home base and minister out from there. So we assumed we had the mentality expectation we would be there for our entire career. So from day one we got there, we had the language. We had the culture. So we were able to actually do something now. So what strategy did we implement? Thank you for asking. We thought to ourselves, well, we're from the United States. And whether you want to use the word Protestant or evangelical, that is what our country is. And because we are from here, they assume that we are Protestant or evangelical. So to walk the streets of Verona, people, you know, when we start to share our faith with them, well, they're like, well, I'm Roman Catholic because I was born here, and my mama and her, you know, dog and so on and so forth. And so it's not a very huge witness if I say I am Protestant or evangelical and I begin to share. It's not as impactful as another Italian who does it. You see what I'm saying? You see, in that culture. So we realized that we needed to become members of an Italian evangelical or Protestant, whatever terminology you would like to use. The point is that the church that we wanted to be a part of needed to be Italian and Bible-centered, of course. And so we found the only church in Verona. and so we started attending there and then started wondering how God could use us in that group of believers. And met with the elders. And before you know it, I'm helping doing practical things again. But at the same time, I'm helping doing practical things, which I'll tell you what I did. Simultaneously, the Lord led Shannon and I to start up some outreach groups. What do I mean by outreach groups? Thank you. So we wanted to be where the non-believers were. And by the way, what Shannon and I, we like to call non-believers, not yet believers. So we wanted to be where those not yet believers were. And instead of saying, hey, come to this evangelical Protestant church and we'll tell you about Jesus, we said, we'll go out and meet them where they were, on their playing ground, in their comfort zone. And so we started to say, what do people around here like? What do people around here do? Well, I mentioned being at the base of the Swiss Alps, there's lots of hiking, and it is gorgeous. And so I come to find out through asking other Italians, what do people around here like? They said people around here love the mountains. And so we thought, let's start a group that does hiking and rock climbing and whatever you can do in a mountain, skiing, snowboarding. So we developed a group called Mountain Life Verona. That was the name of the group. And then we had to decide, how are we going to publicize this? How are people going to find out about the group? And so then we used Facebook, and we created a page for it, and so then we could advertise through Facebook about this new group and what we did and where we're doing it and why we're doing it and so on and so forth. And then we also found out about something called Meetup, meetup.com, or it's also an app if you have a smartphone. And being out here in the rural setting that we are, I already looked. There are some groups out here using Meetup, but, you know, it's not a huge population like millions out here. So there's not a lot of groups, but it does also exist here. But anyways, Verona is a population of 262,000 people. And so there were a lot of groups there, but there was nothing on mountains or hiking or anything like that. And so we started one. And 3.5 years later, when we left Verona, there were over 600 people in that group. So we would do a hike, and over 100 people would show up to walk down a trail together. So we had a lot of exposure to not yet believers. And what did we do? Well, we capitalized on God's creation because we're in the midst of it. We were walking down a trail surrounded by trees, the sun, the crisp air. And that's how we would begin to, I like to say, bridge conversation. You know, we're bridging from something secular to something Christian. And you want it to be organic, you want it to be natural. You don't want people to realize, you don't want them to instantly put up a shield. You want them to stay open with you. And so if you find a way in conversation when evangelizing with people where it just comes about naturally, like your story, nobody can say that your story is not your story. You know, it happened to you and you're saying it happened to me and they weren't there. So always use your testimony to share your faith and to share about Christ and what he's done in your life. But we also shared about the mountains and the creation and what we believed with these not yet believers. We had two other groups. I won't go into them for the sake of time, but one of them was over 300 and so was the other one. So 300, 300 and 600. We were had a good reach of a lot of not yet believers through this implementing this style of outreach. So I highly recommend doing things like that. So what kind of process did we take these people down? How did we take them from the view that through the, that they saw the world to more of a biblical view? So after we met them, do a couple of hikes with them or the other groups, and then the people that you connect with more, as it happens naturally, then we'd invite them over to our home. And they're, of course, curious. What does an American home look like in Verona, Italy? They're curious. As an Italian, they want to know. So we capitalize on that, too. We invite them to our home. And by this time, they already know that we're Christians and what we mean by that and that we attend church, you know, and that we're involved in that. And then we share with them that we actually do a Bible study in our home as well. So now they've already been in our home just for a social setting for a meal. I'm inviting them back to our home to actually get them to open the Bible and maybe for the first time. Because a lot of times in the Roman Catholic, and I'm not speaking about American Roman Catholicism, I'm speaking about Italian Roman Catholicism because I don't have a lot of knowledge of American Catholicism. But in Italy, a lot of times the Catholics, if they attend church, they don't open their Bible. In fact, historically, they're actually taught not to, because who are you to read the words of God and decide for yourself what they mean and things like that is kind of what they're taught. So they're taught to only listen to what the priest says sort of, you know, over there. So a lot of them never open a Bible. So to actually get them to open God's word and to begin to read it for the first time, you can just see it. And it's very powerful as they open. They don't know where any of the books in the Bible are. You know, they don't, you know, it's just amazing to begin that process with them. And of course, then they become like I was on the cruise ship, start to ask questions and things like that. And just to see people start to see the wheels start turning in their head about these spiritual things, these biblical things, things about Jesus in a way that they had never seen before. One question they always ask is, what is the difference between Roman Catholicism and what you believe, Nick? You know, they're asking me. Something I learned in the vast training that the International Mission Board puts us through is to always focus on the similarities, not the differences. Because the moment you start capitalizing and focusing on the differences, what's going to happen? They just put up that shield, you know? And so let's find out first the similarities and let's keep the relationship healthy at first. And then as the relationship as more time passes and that relationship grows, you develop more of a trust and you realize that it's more about caring and things like that. And then you can get in much easier to those differences without them running away and without closing the door and never having a witness with that person ever again. I love this quote, and I don't know who said it, so I hate to quote and not tell you who said it, but maybe some of you have heard it. People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. Yeah? People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And so ministering in a European context there are a lot of similarities to the United States, and there's a lot of differences. Just like we have a lot of similarities in the United States itself with, say, the Tennessee, Kentucky, Georgia area Bible Belt, or the Texas Bible Belt, or the California, don't know what you call it out here, but, you know, there's differences even within our own culture, is my point. And so I want to share with you a little bit about what the textbooks would call the postmodern European worldview. Or basically, if you don't know what a worldview is, it's basically when somebody looks at the world or a situation, what lens, when something bad happens, how do they rationalize it to themselves? That is an aspect of somebody's worldview. How do they make sense of all the good and the bad that happens in the world? Okay, let's just define it like that. Well, in Europe, they are beyond us. Like, they are where we are heading in this area. So I'm going to read one of the thousands of definitions that probably exist for postmodern European culture, for their worldview. It says this: they no longer view truth through a biblical lens. Historically, they did at one time. Okay? So they no longer view truth through a biblical lens. Traditional beliefs, ethics, and morals no longer exist. Truth is relative. Each individual chooses their own truth. Doesn't that sound... Did you get warm? Didn't that feel all warm inside you? Oh, yeah, that's nice. They do not believe in absolute truth. Often they pick and choose, mix and match, as well as add their own created ideas that cannot be backed up by anybody anywhere. I just have a feeling, you know? So this, if you can take that definition that I just gave and you can picture somebody who lives in that, I'm sure you can picture people even around here that view life similar like that. Well, that's a whole continent. That's basically all of Europe that is looking at life through that type of a lens. And so ministry is very relational over there. I think that's kind of biblical as well, but, you know. They have little physical need. They're a first world country or continent. So like the United States. So, you know, they don't need us to dig a well for them so they have water. They don't need us to build orphanages and things like that like we see in other places of the world. And often, I think that often in missions, we view missionaries going out and meeting those types of needs, and that is missions. What do I mean by that? So if we send a missionary over to Africa and he's going around digging wells, there's nothing wrong with that. That is great. That is meeting a need and giving opportunities to love on people and so on and so forth. We shouldn't stop doing that. We should continue to go into orphanages and all these things. What is my point? My point is, what about the rest of the world that doesn't have those types of needs? Do they not need the gospel? Do we decide where to go, where to send groups from our church, depending on what type of need? Oh, they need a roof on their church that was built by another missionary years ago. So we need to send a missionary there because there's that type of need. Now, I'm going to ruffle some feathers here. Are you ready? Whew. Don't we love... I said we, that includes me. But I'm referring to we American Christians. Don't we love to go on a mission trip, and after a week or two, 10 days, when we walk away, we can do this. Oh, my goodness. God used me. I did so good. I helped them. Now, don't hear it wrong. There's nothing wrong with that. But just make sure when you walk out of this room later today that you understand that's not all that missions is, okay? First world context needs the gospel as well. So how do we decide who the gospel's for and who it's not for? Well, if somebody's yet to be born again, I think that clarifies it pretty well. And do we not have those people who have not yet either learned of Christ or who have not yet chosen to follow Christ? Do we not have them in both first, second, and third world contexts? So where do we need to go? Everywhere, right? So being that Shannon and I have been serving 6 years with the International Mission Board over in a European context, I'm sorry to report to you, Baptist churches, that we get a lot of kickback ministering in a first world context. And that is sad. Just because I'm not eating beans and rice and sleeping in a mosquito net, I shouldn't be sharing the gospel where I'm living? I think we should go and we should share the most beautiful love story, the Bible, the Word of God, Scriptures, with people everywhere. Whether they are poor, middle class, or upper class. That's another area we often don't like to go. And I guess you can argue that's because it's difficult. And we want quick results. Don't we? When we go on a mission trip, we want to see something we did. Or we want to see an event that we put on and the people ran up and they fell on their face and they gave their heart to Christ. You know, we need to keep doing that. But we also need to be willing to go on mission trips where at the end of your 7 days, you're questioning, my goodness, how did God even use me? We still have to go to those places. Not yet believers. That's who we got to share the gospel with. And maybe, I don't know if I should say this, maybe we might even need to start, and this is a maybe, just an idea rather, maybe we need to start focusing on those places. The rich and the first world. Just an idea. I'm not saying that we need to or that. I'm not saying I'm standing up here as a prophet before you saying God is, you know, it's none of that. It's just more for our mentality. Happy December, by the way. Lottie Moon. You guys know that name? I've been in Southern Baptist churches that don't. I'm just saying. LMCO. I bet you guys can even tell me what those four letters stand for. 160 million dollars. Well, that's no problem for a church this size, is it? I mean, oh, my pocketbook's not even back there. Sorry. So, I'm sort of a black and white guy. I like numbers. So I'm probably connecting right now with one of you when I say I like numbers. So, is she here? So, I looked at a few numbers that are publicized on any IMB or SBC website, or probably even in some pamphlets you guys have back there. And, course, it changes every day. It's just an estimation and it's just an approximation, but there are 46,000 churches, SBC, around the United States. Oh my lordy, that's a lot of churches. So what happens if we get a calculator and we divide 160 million by 46,000 churches? Well, that means if each church gave $3,478, we'd hit it. That doesn't sound like a lot of money for a church body. It does for an individual. All right. So I really liked that. That was encouraging to me because when I saw that number, 160 million, I about fainted. You know, like, how are we going to do that? But when you break it down, it becomes kind of practical, you know. So of 46,000 churches, How many members are we claiming, you know, are we counting? 15.8 million. Again, it changes every day. It could be, you know, a little different. But so what happens when we divide 160 million by our the amount of believers that we have in these 46,000 churches? So let's divide 160 million by 15.8 million. 15.8 million believers in 46,000 churches. $10. I can handle that. Now, what I don't want you to hear is that each of you just give 10 bucks. Boy, I will have failed my talk if that's what happens. No, because though that's what the numbers work out to, we always know that there's a lot of people who don't give anything. You know? So, anyways, give sacrificially. Give sacrificially. Shannon and I are so happy to be here with you guys today. And for you guys to open the stage for me to stand up here and be able to look at all each of you face in the face and just share a little bit about myself, us getting married and going overseas and sharing the greatest love that any of us have ever experienced with those not yet believers. Thank you guys so much for your support through prayer. Number one, prayer. Even just your thoughts, and let's not leave out financially as well. So thank you guys for your financial support to the 3,800 or 4,000 full-time career missionaries that we have around the planet. And that's just counting the career full-time ones. There's a lot of other programs, a journeyman program, hands-on is something that we participated in. So your sacrificial giving is going a long way and making a big impact around the world. And just ask you guys throughout the month of December to really pray. Seek the Lord on what you can give and what He would be asking you and your family to give and how to sacrificially give. So know you guys very little, but I tell you what, we love you and we are very thankful for you. God bless. Pastor.